Well, how awkward was that? Did anybody start looking around and think, okay, it's not like them to not have something going on. What's happening here? Why is no one moving? Now, I get the fact that we're often like a pretty well-oiled machine, at least we try to be, you know, things moving quite along. So I know by throwing in just that brief moment of silence, maybe catches us off guard. And we'll throw silence into our worship sometimes, but usually we will tell you there's going to be a moment of silence, but not that time. But in that moment right there, and just so you know, that was 30 seconds. That's all it was. Did it feel like longer? It was 30 seconds. How did that silence make you feel? It's okay, you can be honest here. This is a safe place. How many of you thought, this is a little bit uncomfortable? Mm-hmm. The introverts in the room thought, praise God, a moment for me to hear myself think, right? The extroverts are peeling their skin off, going, please, somebody do something, say something. Right, Amy? You know, studies show that a group can only bear about 15 seconds of silence, and that was 30. A group, you know, think about that. We can only bear about 15 seconds of silence. There is something about silence that can be so awkward and so uncomfortable. It can make us feel like we are doing nothing but wasting our time and being useless. In this go, go, go culture, silence and its partner solitude don't get a lot of attention. But maybe they should. You know, we've been in this series that we're calling Spring Cleaning, clearing out the clutter. And for a few weeks now, we've been looking at the various aspects of our lives that we think need a little bit of attention, some cleaning out, in order for us to find contentment and satisfaction, and maybe even a renewed passion in our relationship with Jesus. We've already talked about how we need to go home and look at our houses and look at the stuff around us, and maybe, just maybe, we have a little bit more than we need, and so maybe we could clean out some of that physical stuff and create some space in our lives there and live a little bit more simply at home. Last week, we looked at the fun topic of confession and repentance to see if maybe within our hearts and souls there was a little bit of clutter in there, some things that we might have been holding on to, bitterness, unforgiveness, things like that, that maybe we need to shine the light on and maybe clear out some of the clutter there in our souls. And today, I want to talk about the idea of space, creating space. And it's not something that we do often, and I'm not talking about the space in your storage room or your garage, because it's not the physical space in your life necessarily, although that can help you with this. But I want to talk about creating space in our lives, space where spiritual transformation can occur, space where God can speak to us, space where we create enough room where we can slow down just a little bit, get off that treadmill occasionally, and learn to breathe just a little bit. I mean, just think from, do this with me, really? I mean, this is going to be kind of new agey, but it's okay. Everybody take a deep breath in. And now slowly let it out. Now, how many of you, you're thinking, that felt good. How little do we do that? We don't, do we? I mean, I've even got one of these little fancy Apple Watches, and you know what? 3 times a day it tells me to do? Breathe. I ignore it every time, but it tells me to. But what has happened to our culture where I need an electronic device on my wrist to tap me 3 times a day and say, hey, big dummy, breathe. We just don't do it, right? We just get in this mode and we think, if I stop for just a moment, then I'm wasting time and nobody should waste time. I gotta go. And we do this in every area of our lives. It's not just about I get up and go. It's about, you know, we even work hard at our entertainment and we work hard at our vacations and we work hard at our recreation. I mean, think about the last time that you really just sat down and had a moment where you just breathed. Doesn't happen very often, does it? But maybe it should. I mean, I know I don't have to convince anyone that we need to create space in our lives. I can hear your thoughts already. I've told you I've got this incredible mental power to read your minds up here. And you're going, yeah, this is great, Brent. It's not going to happen for me. You don't know my life. you don't know that I sleep as long as I can every morning and wake up just in time, and I've got it timed out because I know it takes me 8 minutes in the shower and 13 minutes to get my shaving and everything else done. And then I run upstairs and I wake the kids up and I throw a Pop-Tart in the toaster and we eat that on the way out the door, and I drop the kids off and I run to the office and I'm running all day and I don't even really take a full hour for lunch. If I take 15 minutes to scarf down at my desk, then that's great, because then at 4:30 or 5 I'm going to get off work. I've got to go get the kids. And then we come home, and guess what? I've got to cook, and so I'm chopping up stuff and making all this stuff, and then we sit down, and then I have to help the kids with homework, and then there's maybe even a fun kid activity, because schools love to crowd our calendars with that, and then we're going, and we get home at 9 o'clock at night, and it's kids, take a shower, and kids, get your jammies on, and kids, go to bed, until you just finally collapse in your own bed, and yay, we get to do that all over again tomorrow. Anybody else tired just by me saying that? Oh my gosh, it's wearing me out. And what's crazy is we then live for the weekends, right? We live for the weekends only to end up filling our weekends with as much activity as we possibly can. And we roll ourselves groggily into work Monday morning because of what we've done over the weekend. Or we live for that week or two of vacation that we take. That really isn't a vacation. But maybe on that vacation, you do get to sit for just a moment, and it's in that moment you realize, wow, this feels really good. My family and I took a vacation back in October. Do you know it took me 3 days to unwind? It took me 3 days of a 5-day vacation to finally get to a place where I could rest and relax. That's sad. But that's the truth of most of us, isn't it? And that vacation does more to show us just how much we need rest, but it really doesn't give us that lasting and sustaining rest. Would it surprise you, though, that even though we were created to work, I don't think work is a curse. It's part of who we are. It's part of what God created us to do. We weren't created to live like this. We have to figure out how to create some space in our everyday lives. Moments of respite to remind us of what life is really about. To reorient us to the important things, and not just the urgent fires we're always putting out. And what we need to realize is what for many of us might seem like the biggest waste of time ever might actually be the best use of our time. So let's dig a little today into silence and solitude. You know, this idea of silence and solitude, you can go to the bookstore and you can find, you know, shelf after shelf talking about this kind of stuff. It's not a recent creation. It's not that some psychologist within the last 50 years thought, hey, this would be a great way to make some money and sell some books. No, it's been around a long time. In fact, it's a very biblical concept. You look at the Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and all of them make mention of the fact that Jesus himself found a need in his own life for silence and solitude. Let's think about that for just a moment. We believe that Jesus Christ, fully divine and fully human. So divine being God, so he's got one up on us, right? Even Jesus Christ himself found it necessary to get away from the crowds, to get away from his disciples, his family essentially, to go to a lonely and solitary place to collect himself. If even the Son of God needs that respite and that time apart, how much more do you think we need it? In the book of Luke, chapter 5, verse 16, we read it. But Jesus often withdrew to lonely places and prayed. Now, I know some of you are just sitting here right now going, you're salivating. Wipe your chin. It's like, I long for that silence. I long for that solitude. I get it. Moses, many of the prophets, many of the Psalms even, all encourage this. Silence and solitude is a way to understand more about God, who God truly is. And there's a story in the book of 1 Kings that talks about the prophet Elijah. And it's a fascinating story because it talks about how important this moment of silence and solitude was to him. He was a man struggling with depression. He was even struggling with suicidal thoughts. And in this moment of silence and solitude, God was able to use that to give him a fresh and new perspective. and also not just a new perspective, but to renew a passion within him for what he had been called to do. Now, I don't have time to go into great detail for the entire story. In fact, we did it last summer in our Sunday school story series. So if you want the first part of this story, let me tell you, go back to June of last year. Sunday school stories, I talked about Elijah from 1 Kings chapter 18. The quick version is this. The nation of Israel was following false gods. God sends his prophet Elijah to try to turn them back. Elijah challenges the false prophets on the top of a mountain, says, we're going to have a contest. We're going to build two altars. We're going to see whose God is real. We're going to put sacrifices on top, and whoever's God answers by prayer and consumes the sacrifice by fire, that's the winner. And it's a funny story. They're the prophets of Baal, the false god, they're screaming, they're yelling, they're, you know, dancing around, and Elijah is taunting them. I love Elijah because he's like, hey, scream louder, maybe he's in the bathroom. I think that's a great line in the Bible. I mean, that just shows you how real the Bible can be. You know, he's like me. He's like trash talking him during this contest. It's great. In the end, Elijah gets done. He pours water on his. I mean, he's doing everything to make it harder for him to win. He says one prayer, God answers, fire falls from heaven, it consumes the sacrifice, it licks up all the water, and God has won victorious. And it is amazing. And what should have been this incredible moment of victory, where the people would have turned from their idols and started following God, it wasn't that, and they didn't do that. Not only that, Jezebel, the wicked queen who had led the nation down this horrible path of false worship, put a hit out on Elijah. Said, I'm going to kill you dead. And Elijah, coming off one of the greatest victories of all time, runs away in despair. And that's where we pick up our story today. He is scared. He is out of ideas. He is out of strength. He is out of miracles. Elijah is completely spent. So much so that he did actually pray, God, just kill me. God, just take my life. And in 1 Kings 19, we read that God sends an angel to attend to him. And I don't want to spend a lot of time here, but I do find it incredibly fascinating, a part of the story. Because Elijah goes to speak and an angel wakes him up and says to him, not, hey, have more faith, buddy. Or doesn't say, hey, read your Bible more. You know what the angel says? He says, hey, Elijah, wake up. It's time to eat. Elijah goes back to sleep. The angel comes back, wakes him up again. Again, doesn't say, hey, faithless dude. What else does God have? Doesn't say that. Again, looks at Elijah and says, hey, get up and eat. Twice, God sends an angel to make food for Elijah. As I read through that, it was so fascinating, because how many times when people are struggling and depressed or going through emotional things in their lives do we want to look at people and say, well, you just need more faith. No, sometimes what the Bible's telling us, you need a good night's sleep and a good meal, because that can be as beneficial sometimes. And it's not helpful to look at people and say, have more faith. Keep that in mind. Elijah eats the second time. He gets up and he travels for 40 days and 40 nights. To a place called Mount Horeb, or we also know it as Mount Sinai. This is the place where Moses received the Ten Commandments from God. And we're going to start reading in 1 Kings 19, starting in verse 9. Here's the story. And the word of the Lord came to him. What are you doing here, Elijah? He replied, I've been very zealous for the Lord Almighty. The Israelites have rejected your covenant, torn down your altars, and put your prophets to death with the sword. I'm the only one left, and now they're trying to kill me too. The Lord said, go out and stand on the mountain in the presence of the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now, don't miss the coolness of this story. God says, I'm coming. I'm going to show up. That's awesome. Then a great and powerful wind tore the mountains apart, shattered the rocks before the Lord, but the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, there was an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake came a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. When Elijah heard it, he pulled his cloak over his face and went out and stood at the mouth of the cave. Then a voice said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? The rest of the story continues on, where God continues to reorient Elijah's perspective to help him see things as they truly are. Elijah thought he was the only person left following God, and God says, hey, you're not. There are 7,000 people following me. And then God renews his call to Elijah. You know, as I read this story several times this week, one thing that continually struck me, it's what I see in my own life, something that was not maliciously done, but it was something that was kind of bred in me as a kid growing up in church and in youth group, where we longed for the big, miraculous moments with God. I remember when I was in youth group, every year we went to a conference in December. It was in Little Rock, Arkansas. It was at the fanciest hotel in Little Rock, the Excelsior Hotel downtown. It was for 3 days, and it was amazing. The music was awesome. The teaching was amazing, mainly because it was me listening to somebody other than my dad. But the speakers were cool, too, because they said words that my dad wouldn't say. Ooh, you know that risky lingo that the youth were using it today. Being away from my parents for days were awesome, too. But what it did, I love that conference. And man, you get all excited and you make these big commitments and woo, God is good. But what it did is it teach me to long for those moments, and that every day, nothing could measure up to the thrill of being on that mountaintop. And as I read about Elijah, who desperately needed God, God did not give him what we would think he needed. You see, yes, there was a great and powerful wind. Did you see how powerful that wind was? It tore the mountain apart. I'd probably been a little scared in that moment, thinking I'm going to get blown off this mountain. It was spectacular. And it was everything that we think this life-changing moment would have been. And yet, in that powerful wind, the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. If ever there was something that could shake someone from their despair and encourage somebody, surely it would be a God-ordained earthquake to shake you out of that. And yet we read, the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, there was a fire. Not only do you have a fire, but look at these things. You have a wind, you have earthquake, you have a fire. Elijah had heard the stories dating back to Moses and even before. Do you know what these three things represent? These three things right here represent the presence of God. Go read the story of Moses when he was on Mount Sinai. You know what you find? You find wind. You find earthquake. You find fire. You find the presence of God in that moment. And yet, in this moment, when Elijah's looking for this powerful, boom, explosion of God in his life, even with the fire, the Lord was not in the fire. Wow. The Lord was not there. Everything that should have been God speaking and transforming Elijah, that conference, that overseas mission trip to a third world country, that spectacular Easter service with rock and worship and an amazing pastor bringing a message, everything that should have been wasn't. And after the fire came a gentle whisper. Probably better translated, a sound of sheer silence. Think about that. You've got these miraculous things happening, blowing up. The best action movie effects you can imagine. And then all of a sudden, and in that silence, Elijah knew something had happened so profound that it wasn't the earthquake that made him cover his face. It wasn't the wind or the fire that made him cover his face. But when the silence came, he covered his face. Why? Because he knew in that moment he was on holy ground. He was in the presence of the Almighty. Just think about those words. To be in the presence of the Almighty. When you hear that, What do you think? Do you think it's a good and high and lofty goal? Do you think that's for other people? For the super spiritual? Maybe that's more for that second service crowd. They're older, they've known him longer, so maybe that's easier for them. Possibly. But do you know that what Elijah experienced on the mountaintop is available to you and to me? It's an invitation that is being constantly extended to us by our Creator, where He's sitting there just asking us, please, come sit with me. Come sit in my presence. You know, Friday, as I sat in my office and I typed those words, I had a holy moment. I had to stop typing. And you guys know, I've told you before, my go-to emotion is anger. It's certainly not tears. But as I sat in my office on Friday at my desk typing those words, the invitation to be in the presence of the Almighty, I just had to stop and breathe and understand that right then and right there, I was having a holy moment. Tears filled my eyes, and I knew God was with me. And I'd love to tell you, God said, Brent, here's three things to take from this. That wasn't what happened, but it didn't need to happen, because all I needed in that moment of silence and solitude was to just be with my Lord. I'm a type A guy. I measure everything. I measure the offering we take today. I measure the number of butts in the seats this morning. We measure the number of kids downstairs. We measure everything here. And it drives me crazy to have something in my life like silence and solitude that I can't measure. I want to say, well, here's what God told me, or here's how productive this was. Sometimes I do get that. Sometimes God says, hey, Brent, I can remember one moment where I was just sitting in silence in my office, and I had been very critical of somebody. And in that moment, God shined that in me, and I had to address it and deal with it. But you know, sometimes for me to sit in silence and solitude is like sitting at home on my couch. Doesn't happen as much with the older kids, but occasionally Jasmine will come and she'll crawl up in my lap and she'll just sit there. And you know, Jasmine is not there to say, Daddy, tell me three things I need to know. Daddy, tell me three things I need to fix about myself. You know, sometimes she just wants the safety and security of being in her Father's arms. We have got to move to a place as Christ followers to where we stop seeing our relationship with God as this list of things that we have to accomplish. And that if our relationship with God is more important or more special or more right, if I do these things or if I hear this, and we've got to get to a place where we are okay just sitting in the presence of our God. And that is not always easy. I'm completely off my notes. I have no idea where I am, so we're just going to move forward. You may be wondering, what is this? My staff will tell you, this is Brent's office. This is Brent's corner, exactly as it is set up. In fact, I'll have to move this back after church. This is where I go most days. It's not every day, but most days, to spend time with God. Now, you guys know I have 800 children at home. Silence and solitude is a precious commodity there. But one of the nice things about my job is I can come into my office and I can shut my door. And I can block out the world and I can sit here. And occasionally, I'll light a candle just because I want to remember God's presence with me. I want to think about the Holy Spirit being a part of my life. I keep my pens here because this is also my reading chair, so I highlight books. I love to highlight books. I have my Ashworth Road Journal. I'm taking notes, and then this is a special pen that lets me highlight or underline things in my Bible, books that I may be reading, but more importantly, this is just where I can sit and just be with God and enjoy Him. Doesn't always mean I get 15 things, but sometimes it's just enough to sit in the presence of God. You saw me pick up this glass. This is not original to me. I read it in a book, but man, this illustration spoke to me. Lady was struggling with just a lot of stuff in her life, and she went to a counselor. And the counselor said, "You know what? This is your life. And this is how most of us live right here. Constant activity, constant stirring, constant movement, never slowing down, never stopping, never doing anything. And you know what you can see through that? Absolutely nothing. Maybe what most of us need is to stop the activity, to allow the raging river within us to be still for just a moment. I don't know if you can tell, but there's already sediment at the bottom of this glass, and the top is getting much clearer. And when I picked it up and moved it, I could see all the way through it. How many of us need a little silence and solitude to be able to see a little more clearly? Maybe it's to see a little more clearly our God. Psalm 46:10 tells us to be still and know that I am God. There's a reason for that. You see, God, I believe, is on the outside of many of our lives. And He is a gentleman. He doesn't bust down the door and He doesn't force His way in, but He stands there outside the busyness of our lives, outside the noise, continuing to offer us an invitation that says, step out, come join me outside and allow the water to go calm and the sediment to fall. Maybe we need to be still because there's some relational issues in our lives that we need some perspective on. And maybe, just maybe, you need to be still because you know what? You just need to feel the love of your Father who cares so deeply about you that He's continuing to say, please come. Please come. And I think I would be remiss if I did not say a few things on how do you do this. You know what? It's not as complicated as we might think. First thing is you need to know there's no quick fixes. There's no quick fixes at all. But it's also not complicated. Find a time. Find a place. Moms and dads, if you have kids, you may have to work out a schedule. You may have to say, hey, this is your time. This is my time. And you know what? Find a place in your bedroom, in your basement, in the storeroom, somewhere. Put a chair. Put a candle. Where can you get away? What door has a lock on it? I mean, moms, I get it. You can't go to the bathroom without a kid coming in on you. I know. I see how it happens at my house. But find that space. Create a sacred space where you can go. Set a modest goal. Do not walk out of here and go, I'm going to spend the next 60 minutes in silence. No, you won't. Most of you couldn't handle 30 seconds. I remember we had a spiritual formation retreat one time, and we brought a guy in that was leading us through some silence and solitude exercises. And he gave us 10 minutes. This was funny, because we're sitting there for 10 minutes, and we get to the end of that 10 minutes, and he was like, hey, so how did you do? And a lot of us in the circle were like, wow, that seemed to go pretty fast. And one person was like, I didn't think it was ever going to end. That was the longest 10 minutes of my life. You know what? Set a modest goal. If all you can do is 5 minutes, do 5 minutes. There are apps you can download that'll give you a chime for the beginning and end. They come in 5 and 10 and 20 minute increments, and don't feel like you have to do an hour may be too long. Get comfortable. Not too comfortable, but get comfortable. And don't judge your time. Don't do like, I need to get this out of this time. Sometimes it's just about being. It's that simple. Turn off the noise. sit, get comfortable. Distractions are going to come. That's okay. When they come, just kind of get something in your mind and just kind of say that, oh, for His mercy endures forever. Allow that to be something that kind of brings you back. And then when your time's up, get up and go back to life. What's amazing about Elijah is God never said, sit here in silence for the rest of your life. Sorry, introverts. Didn't happen. What God did say is, now it's time for you to go. The silence is never a replacement for what we've been called to do. We sit there for a moment to get a new perspective, to be renewed in our passion for God, and then we go. And that's what we learn. Now, my question for you is, can you do it? Are you willing to give it a shot? The reason I was able to incorporate this into my life is because I took a class one time that had a requirement. You must find a spiritual discipline that's not normally part of your routine and do it. And we all knew I wasn't going to do fasting. So I chose silence and solitude. And I really did find it life-changing. This is where true transformation takes place. It's in the silence. If this is where transformation can happen, it might be important enough for us to make a regular part of our lives. So here's what I want us to do right now. I just want you to close your eyes, and it may be uncomfortable. I won't keep this going forever. But take a deep breath or two. Don't worry about where you're going to lunch. That'll work itself out. You'll eat, I promise. Think about an attribute of God. Maybe it's His holiness, His mercy, His grace, His love. And just take just a moment to sit in the silence. And if nothing else, enjoy being in the presence of the Almighty. That was a minute, and hopefully it was enough to just whet your appetite for maybe a little more of that in your life. I know that is so against what we normally do, but God desires that with you. He made us to need these moments of rest, these moments of silence and solitude. Never designed to go 180 miles an hour, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365. I mean, good grief, even God rested on the seventh day. I realize that pulling away sometimes and going into that private, maybe holy space that you've created is not possible. But maybe a reminder on your calendar that pops up while you're at work. Says, hey, breathe. And just for 60 seconds while you're at your desk, create a moment of silence and solitude. Yeah, there may be phones ringing and there may be people yakking.